Michelle is a third-year PhD student in the Department of Health Behavior and Health Education at the University of Michigan. Her research interests include LGBT health disparities, women's health, and sexuality research. She explores these topics in work with Dr. Bauermeister's Sexuality and Health Lab, her position as a peer educator with UM's Sex Education Group, Sexpert Team, and her time as a graduate student instructor in women's studies. So, welcome.
Thank you. All right. Hi, everyone. Thank you for being here today. I know last session, last day. Your level of commitment is impressive. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit today about a manuscript I have in progress entitled I Get By With a Little Help from My Friends. This is a study of LGBT community social network characteristics and smoking behaviors in young sexual minority women. I'm obligated to let you know that I have no conflicts of interest to disclose to you all today. So let's talk a little bit about smoking and young sexual minority women. Consistently across the public health research, this is a trend that has been demonstrated in which young sexual minority women are smoking at greater rates than their heterosexual female peers. They also are uptaking smoking at a higher frequency throughout adolescence and young adulthood. In studies that compare young sexual minority women to their older contemporaries, they're also smoking at higher rates than older women. There are some studies in which young sexual minority women are compared to young sexual minority men, and there appears to be a disparity there as well. So this is really a population that is a priority for us in terms of eliminating this disparity. Typically, smoking has been understood through a sexual minority stress framework. We have hypotheses about this originating because women are potentially dealing with issues around sexual minority stress. We wanted to kind of contribute to this literature and explore the ways in which women's social relationships might either help or hinder their smoking rates. Of particular interest in our work in the lab is this idea of LGBT community. So when I'm speaking of the LGBT community, I'm discussing women's social and relational ties to other sexual and gender minorities, and kind of this idea of a collective identity that women might feel as they create those relationships. In terms of how this would relate to women's smoking behaviors, there are kind of two contradictory hypotheses. The first is this idea of community connectedness as being health protective. So if we're thinking of smoking in terms of the sexual minority stress framework, we might consider the ways in which connections to a broader LGBT community might be health protective in buffering some of that sexual minority stress. Alternatively, if we're considering LGBT community spaces as potentially having more smoking going on within them, and also as being the target of tobacco advertising campaigns, as women enter these spaces as they're developing their sexual identities, they might come across more permissive norms around smoking and potentially increase the risk of smoking behaviors. Of course, when considering the LGBT community, we need to be cognizant of the fact that this is a broad and heterogeneous community. There's been a lot of important critiques around how this community might actually be a tapestry of kind of sub-identities and sub-communities around racial lines, gender lines, sexual orientation, and class. Traditionally, there's also been a lot of critique around whether or not women have access to traditionally LGBT spaces, as they might be more male-dominated. But this is not to discount that sexual minority women have relationships to one another and that they might have alternate means to accessing sexually related or sexuality related support networks. So we wanted to be cognizant of those relationships and think about other ways that we could potentially tap into them, which is why we wanted to explore this idea of social network characteristics as well. And parallel to what we hypothesize around LGBT community connections, we have kind of two oppositional hypotheses to how these social connections might play out in terms of smoking behaviors. The first is that as women have a lot of other sexual minority women in their social networks, potentially they're receiving sexuality-specific social support, which would decrease their need to smoke. And then contrary to that, if they have a lot of sexual minority females in their social networks, maybe they have more permissive social norms around smoking and potentially increase their rates of smoking. So that brings me to my research questions for this particular study. The first question is, how do young sexual minority women's participation in the LGBT community relate to their smoking behaviors? The second is, how do the characteristics of young sexual minority women's social networks relate to their smoking behaviors? And then the third, we wanted to think about whether or not LGBT community and social networks were operating independently from one another or were operating through each other. So let me talk to you a little bit about some of the methods we used. All the data for this particular study came out of the Michigan Smoking and Sexuality Survey. To be eligible to participate in this survey, women had to be between the ages of 18 and 24. They had to either identify as a sexual minority identity, and any non-heterosexual label would permit them to be included, or have had sexual experiences with a woman in the past year, so including some behavioral markers of identity as well. We primarily recruited through Facebook with ads tailored to women who listed themselves as interested in other women. We also included some outreach to community agencies that worked with LGBT women as well. The questionnaire itself was online. It took women on average 45 to 60 minutes to complete, and they earned $25 gift certificate for their participation in this study. Our final analytic sample was 470 women. On average, they were 21 years of age. It was a predominantly lesbian-identified sample, but we did have a good representation of bisexual and other identified women. 70% of our sample was white, 11% black, 6% Latina, and 13% other identified. We also asked women about how they would characterize the community in which they lived, and we found that about 55% were saying that they lived in an urban context. In terms of smoking behaviors, we asked for this particular analysis along two axes. The first was smoking frequency. We asked women currently how often they smoked, whether it was every day, some days, or never. And if you just note that almost 76% of our sample were currently smoking in some capacity. And then in terms of smoking amount, we asked women on a typical day that you were smoking, are you smoking more than 5 cigarettes or less than 5 cigarettes? And 77% said that they were smoking 5 cigarettes, and we've characterized these women as heavy smokers. And 23% with less than 5 cigarettes per day. Our data and analytic strategy for this analysis was a series of stepwise logistic regressions on three primary outcomes. The first was smoking status, so looking at smokers versus non-smokers. And then we really wanted to deconstruct what was happening among the smokers, and so we pieced apart smoking frequency, so looking at everyday versus some day smokers, and also smoking amount, so again, looking at heavy versus light smokers. And then our series of models. Model one, we examined women's smoking behaviors in terms of their demographics, so that's in relation to the descriptives I gave you earlier around sexual identity, age, regional context, and race. We controlled for stress with a daily hassle scale, and then we also examined LGBT community characteristics along three variables. The first was women's perception of themselves as relating to a local LGBT context. Then also their membership in group LGBT organizations, and finally their participation in LGBT events and bars and LGBT spaces. Then the second model, we added on top of that social network characteristics. So we included a measure of peer social support, as well as how many of their friends share their same sexual identity, and how much of their time was spent with other same-sex attracted women. For people who are particularly interested in measurement, I've included a couple bonus slides at the end of this presentation that kind of break that down a little bit more specifically. So some of our results. All right, we're going to begin by talking about smoking status. I'm going to throw these numbers up on the board, but I'm going to also move on to our explanations. Just to give you an idea, I'm presenting some odds ratios here, and I wanted to draw your attention to the fact that self-perception as a member of the LGBT community, organizational membership, and peer support were the primary relationships we found here. So what we found was that self-perception as a member of the LGBT community was health protective. So the higher women rated themselves as being a member of a local LGBT community, the less likely they were to currently be a smoker. Then conversely, we found that LGBT organizational membership increased the odds of smoking. So the more organizations that women reported themselves as being a member of, increased their odds of being a smoker. However, when we added social network characteristics to the model, this relationship washed away. And we actually found that peer support was very protective. So women who rated themselves as having a lot of peer support were less likely to be a smoker. So then we move on to smoking frequency. So the non-smokers have been dropped from this sample, and this is now just looking at the 360 women who reported that they're currently a smoker. And I want to draw your eyes to organizational membership, peer support, and having friends of the same identity. So what we found here in terms of smoking frequency was that LGBT organizational membership decreased the odds of being an everyday smoker. However, this association disappeared when accounting for social network characteristics. So it seems to be that this LGBT organizational construct is actually better accounted for by thinking about women's social networks and how they describe their social networks. We also found that peer support increased the odds that one was an everyday smoker, and we kind of puzzled around what this potentially could mean, and we have a couple ideas about what that could be. The first is potentially that everyday smokers are engaging in a lot more strategies around active coping, so they have high social support, but they're also using cigarettes as kind of like a package of their coping mechanisms. And so it would be kind of interesting to do further research exploring the motivations for smoking between someday smokers and everyday smokers. Alternatively, this might just be a place where we're seeing the difference between kind of social casual smokers and everyday smokers. The broader social literature or smoking literature talks about the ways that social smokers engage in smoking tends to have to do a lot with social stressors. Conversely, everyday smokers have more of the physical addiction to nicotine. And then finally, having friends of the same identity decreased the odds of being an everyday smoker, and that hypothesize it really has to do with this idea of sexuality-related social support being important in these women's lives. And then finally, we investigated smoking amount. Again, so this has to do with whether women smoked more than 5 cigarettes a day or less than 5 cigarettes a day, and drawing your attention to self-perception and friends of the same identity. So in terms of smoking amount, perception of membership in the LGBT community associated with less smoking, you should notice that this is something that's been consistent throughout all of our slides. And then friends of the same identity associated with fewer cigarettes smoked. So now we're going to kind of pull this all together. We found across all of these models that social connections in terms of belongingness and peer support were health protective for these young women across all of our outcomes. In terms of frequency, we found that kind of interesting finding that peer support was associated with more frequent smoking, yet for both frequency and amount of cigarettes, having same-sex attractive friends was health protective. Again, highlighting this idea that sexuality-related support is really integral in these young women's lives. So what are the implications for this study, and what can we do with some of these findings? We think that our study is particularly useful in providing this cross-sectional snapshot of what's happening in terms of women's social networks and how it relates to smoking. But we think that it would be really useful to also do these examinations longitudinally over time and kind of develop smoking trajectories and see if they change as women enter and exit the LGBT community and have different types of social networks that have more or less sexual minority females in them. In terms of intervention work, we think that there's ample evidence that young sexual minority women's ties to one another and the greater community are health protective. And in terms of intervention building and intervention making, we may need to think about the ways that we could create community spaces that are attractive and appealing to young sexual minority women, that they can create these relationships with greater frequency and greater ease. But we don't want to discount the fact that women already have these relationships and they have these ties to one another that are actually helping their health and are health protective in many ways. And so it's important for us to think creatively as public health practitioners about ways that we can utilize existing community spaces in which women are gathering and also tap into these networks that are potentially outside of what we think of as traditionally LGBT venues in order to disseminate anti-smoking programming and kind of get these messages out into the broader their broader social networks. So I want to say thank you to the University of Michigan and the Sex Lab for sending me out here today, and I believe I have questions at the end. So thank you so much.
This reminds me of a study we saw last year where I think it was among MSM that actually some peer support was related to more drinking. So I think it depends on who your peers are and what they're doing.